everybody. Welcome to episode 381 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This episode is a few interviews I did at Denver Comic Con a couple weeks ago. I sat down with Cecil Castellucci to talk about her recent run on Shade the Changing Girl and Shade the Changing Woman. We also chatted about her recently released graphic novel, Soupy Leaves Home. I also spoke with Sam Humphreys about his Green Lanterns run, writing Simon Baz and especially Jessica Cruz, dealing with anxiety and those kind of things. And Sam also teases his upcoming run on Harley Quinn, who will be going to Apocalypse. So really looking forward to that. And then finally, I sat down with Steve Orlando. We talked about his recent DC New Age of Heroes title, The Unexpected, as well as his upcoming Wonder Woman run. So, as always, we appreciate you listening. Hope you enjoy the interviews, and we'll talk to you next time. Hey, this is Jace from the Comic Source coming to you live from the floor of Denver Comic Con. I'm here with writer Cecil Castellucci. Thank you for joining me, Cecil.
Oh, thanks a lot.
So let's talk first about your history with comics.
Sure.
Did you grow up reading them? Like, how did you...
Yep. Batman was my first boyfriend. Superman, a close second. I cut my teeth on reading with Batman and Superman comics. My parents had gotten me the omnibus of the Golden Age, sort of 40s and 50s versions of those two characters. So I read those, and then we're French, so Tintin, Asterix, all that. So comics has always been part of my life.
And did you know really early on that you wanted to be a writer?
Absolutely, yeah. When I saw Star Wars, the Death Star blows up and Darth Vader goes spinning off, it was the first time I understood that a story could continue and that it was someone's job to continue that story. That was my origin story. I knew I wanted to be a writer that day.
So when did you put it together that you actually wanted to write comics?
You mean how old was I? 7.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, no. Comics, I have to say, comics came a little bit later. It was something that I always knew I wanted to write, either movies or books.
Tell stories.
Tell stories. That was the telling story thing. Comics, it was something that, like, I always loved, and, you know, I sort of had put it away for a while, got to college, started reading, like, Naughty Bits by Roberta Gregory and, like, Love and Rockets, and then I was living in Montreal when Drawn and Quarterly was being born, so I was going to all their comic jams that they had with, like, Seth and Chester Brown and Julie Doucet and, like, that whole Canadian indie, you know, amazing scene. So I knew it was something cool, but I knew that I really wanted to write comics when I read The Dead Enders by Ed Brubaker.
Right.
And because I write young adult novels, mm-hmm. and I read that comic and I thought, this is a young adult novel. I see how I could write a comic book. So that was sort of, the day that I Googled or Alta Vista'd, how to submit a comic book.
Right. So something about Dead Enders, like the sequential art of story.
No, it was like just the story. It wasn't the sequential art part, it was the story.
But
it cracked it for me and how you could do it.
But it made you realize that you could find a way to tell your type of story through sequential art.
It was more like I saw that the kinds of stories that I wanted to tell were possible
in comics.
Yeah, that someone was doing something like that.
Got it. Well, let's talk specifically about Shade the Changing Girl. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your version of Shade, quite different from previous versions.
Yeah, so my Shade is a bird alien named Loma, who is obsessed with Rack Shade and with Earth. She loves this TV show called Life with Ani. That's sort of an I Love Lucy show. And she decides she wants to go to Earth because she's heard there are a lot of feelings there and she wants to feel. And she steals the coat and goes to Earth and possesses the body of a 16-year-old girl who's the biggest bully in her school. So now Loma, this bird, has to navigate being on Earth as a human in a body of a teenager going to high school where everybody hates her. And her superpower is madness. So it's kind of like that crazy, sort of a conjunction of how we feel when we're teenagers and like everything is just overly emotional and dramatic and sort of feeling alien in your own body.
So a lot to unpack there. Let's talk first about what made you decide to tell the story from a female perspective?
Well, Gerard Way, who runs the Young Animal imprint, he had one sentence and it just said, "Shade the changing girl possesses body of bully." That was it. So that's what I was given and that's what I ran with.
So let's talk about bullying, right? Something that's very... It's talked about more now than it was probably when you and I were growing up. So there's this idea of putting her in a body of somebody who was kind of vile and manipulative, and she just wasn't a very nice person. So right away, Loma's kind of behind the eight ball. She's kind of starting from further behind. So was it that you wanted to make a statement about overcoming obstacles? Was it a way to bring bullying in to see the effects? Was it a bit of both?
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting because it's like Gerard is the one who was like, "I wanted to be a bully." I took it to be like, when I read Shade, the Changing Man, the body that he inhabits is vile. It's a serial killer.
Right.
And so what is a kind of serial killer in high school is a bully.
Right.
So to me, they were sort of equated, and that's how I looked at it. And then I do think that that when you have a character who is trying to figure out what it means to be human, putting them in a situation where they were, where they have a troubled past, where it's not so easy to just slip into a human body, makes that character have a lot more to overcome and a lot more to do in order to become human, like, you know.
Kind of discovering what it means to be human.
Exactly.
But here's the other great thing about the way you chose to set it, because in a way high school is such a transformative time in our lives, as you're kind of discovering, like, forget the alien part.
Yeah.
We all discover in high school to some extent what it means to be human.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I love writing young adult literature, because it's the first time that we're feeling anything. First time we're betrayed, first time we fall in love, first time we hate, you know. And so when we're teenagers, it feels like it's the end of the world every day.
Right.
And because it's the first time that we've had these feelings, so we don't know how to navigate them. It's kind of like what Loma's going through. She doesn't know what it means to be human. So it is a very direct parallel. The other thing is that when you're a teenager, your body is transforming.
Yep.
You know, things are growing out of places, and you got boils and, you know, pimples and hairs and, you know, all like smells, you know. And that also felt very similar to how Loma would feel being in this human skin sack, you know.
Right.
It just felt like a real organic fit with the both of them. And then to go back to what you were saying before, I read all of Ditko's, you know, his run, and all of Milligan's run. I was familiar a little bit with the Milligan run, but I had never read the whole thing. And so then what I tried to do is I tried to pay homage to both of those versions while completely staking my own territory with Marley. Have to mention the wonderful, amazing, most amazing artist in the world, Marley Zarconi.
Yeah, her she has a very zany style is how I would, and it suits the books
so well.
So yeah, incredible art. I love the fact that, and you brought it up, I was going to bring it up myself, the physical part also, the body ownership, how we do change so much in high school, maturing, and then you kind of have to embrace it. You have to realize, okay, this is how I look. This is the way my body has formed. And again, for Loma, it's like even more so for her because she never had a body to grow up in.
Yeah, and her only point of reference is this I Love Lucy character as what that's what Earth is like, and that's what women are like, and that's what gender stereotypes are like. So, and she comes to Earth, and it's completely not like life with honey, you know?
Right. And the other fact that you change it to female perspective makes it a little topical as well, because, you know, today's society, especially our current political state, you know, body ownership and women having
absolutely
choices, yeah, you know, it's so important to, yeah, put that, especially for young women to understand,
yeah,
that that's your body, no one else should, yeah, touch it, and everything that goes along,
yeah,
with that.
And I think that, like, we really leaned into it. So that's something also that at some point, you know, because the election happened when we had just started writing the book. I'd been writing it for a little while.
Right.
When that happened, you know, things started happening in the world. And Marley and I decided we would lean into that a little bit, you know, especially with the body ownership thing. Especially in the second arc, when there's the body swap between Spoiler and Honey
right,
and Shade.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about the body ownership and her, you know, navigating high school and that time in our lives, you know, we talked about physical changes, we talked about maturing and becoming a human, but that's also a time in our lives where all of a sudden you're forced to make these decisions and start taking control of your own fate. Where am I going to go to college? What am I going to study?
Yeah.
And Loma coming here is really her deciding,
yeah,
I'm going to take control of my own fate. Things,
yeah,
aren't working out so great back home.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go this way. So have you had readers kind of react to that?
Yeah, and I mean, especially now too with the Changing Woman, it's like 5 years later.
Right.
And everybody's sort of gone their own way and stuff. And she's had to sort of figure out what it means to be here. I mean, she's kind of stuck. You know, she's stuck on Earth now. So she has to make the best of it. And what does it mean to really be a human now? And yeah, she's made this decision. It's had consequences. Things are happening, and so she has to figure it out. So now she has consequences to, you know, to what the choices that she made from leaving Meta and stuff.
And also not, maybe she's also discovering in the most recent issues that feeling isn't all it's cracked up to be. Seems like she's come to understand that.
Oh yeah, there's that too. I forgot about that.
Right.
Yes, that feeling has consequences, and that it can cause a kind of pain. It can cause you pain, and it can cause other people pain. But there are also consequences to not feeling.
Right. Exactly. So, you have an ending in mind for the story. You mentioned yesterday,
oh, yep,
that you kind of, did you know right from the start,
yep,
like beginning, middle, end?
I knew exactly where we,
okay,
were going. Yeah.
Great. So all you Shade, the Changing Girl and Changing Woman fans,
yeah,
out there, don't worry. We know it's ending, but Cecil's getting,
yep,
enough space to tell the story exactly.
Yeah. Marley and I, we knew where we were going. We decided to end it after six issues for Shade the Changing Woman. We knew where we wanted to go. I will say, I want to make sure that everybody knows that they should be reading the backup stories in Shade the Changing Woman, because that's very important information. I like to think of the backup stories as a spoked storytelling to give you essential ingredients to what you'll need for the whole story.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's talk a little bit about your other work.
Sure, you I got lots of it.
Yeah, you mentioned your young adult novels. You mentioned your new graphic novel.
Yep.
So why don't you tell us what that's all about?
Sure. My new graphic novel is called Soupy Leaves Home. It's a historical fiction. It's about a girl who leaves an abusive home, runs away from her dad in 1932, and dresses up as a boy and rides the rails as a hobo. So she discovers hobo culture, hobo life, and sort of figures out what it means to be a modern woman in 1932 and how she can sort of move forward, you know, by learning so much from hobo culture.
And what? Well, where did this idea for the story come from? What made you want to explore this era?
So somebody had put a meme on Facebook. What would your hobo name be? And I wrote Soupy. And then I was like, yeah, what is a hobo? I think I know what a hobo is. So I started Googling hobos, you know, and I'd seen some movies and, you know, Charlie Chaplin, Little Tramp, and,
mm-hmm,
you know, Journey of Natty Gann. And, you know, there were a couple of, there was a silent movie I'd seen. then I started really deep diving, and it was like, oh, hobos are cool. They have their own culture, their own code of law,
right?
The secret signs that they would leave for each other. They really had to help each other. They were migrant workers. It just became really fascinating, so I really wanted to tell this story.
And can you tell us about your artist that you're collaborating with?
Sure, Jose Pimenta. He is amazing. He came to us, I'd sold the book and I'd had a different artist, and then that artist couldn't do it, and so we had to find a new artist, and Jose had done, he was a friend of a friend's, and he had done a book with Van Jensen called The Leg, which was also based in 1930s.
Yep.
So it was a natural fit, and he's the greatest artist, the greatest, he did all the coloring as well, and the coloring is very specific, and it's sort of two-tone, but it moves colors throughout the book, and yeah, it's just a pleasure to work with him.
Cool. Well, I'm going to get a copy.
Great.
And I'll let all you listeners know after I've had a chance to read it.
It's nominated for 3 Excellence in Graphic Literature Awards tonight, so we'll see if we win anything.
Oh, good. Best of luck, for sure. Yeah. That's awesome. Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Don't Cosplay With My Heart. That's my newest novel. It's a young adult novel. It's a YA novel about a girl whose father is accused of a white collar crime. So in order to deal with that sort of suckiness in life, she starts dressing up, she starts cosplaying, and she starts a cosplay club at school and starts going to comic book conventions. So it takes place over 4 comic book conventions with her cosplay club, some boys that she likes to romance, and it ends up at San Diego Comic-Con.
Cool, really cool. Well, if any of our listeners want to follow along with your work, where's the best place? Online, social media, all that?
Yeah, MissCecil.com is my website, at Miss Cecil on Twitter.
Okay, fair enough. And I'll put links to both the Twitter and the website in the show notes. So everybody can. So thanks so much for your time, Cecil. It's great chatting.
Thank you. Nice chatting with you as well.
All right, this is Jace coming to you live from the floor of Denver Comic-Con. I'm here with writer Sam Humphries.
What's going on? How you doing, Jace?
I'm great, man. Thanks for... We've been trying to have you on for a while now. I'm glad we're finally
able to. I know. It's been 40 long years we've been trying to make this happen, and we're going to break that hot streak.
That's right. Here we go. So let's talk a little bit before we dive in specifically. Like, previously we wanted to talk Green Lanterns, but for some of our listeners who may not be familiar, what's some of your previous work?
You could tell them what my previous work is. You know what my previous work is.
All right, Green Lanterns.
There you go. Good. That's a good one.
An awesome critically acclaimed run on Nightwing.
Thank you very much for saying so. I appreciate that.
Harley Quinn coming soon.
Harley Quinn coming up 4th of July. When is this airing?
This is going to go up next week.
Next week. So 4th of July. My first issue of Harley Quinn. It's Harley Quinn issue 45. First story is Harley Quinn going to the planet Apocalypse. We are bringing Harley closer to the center of the DC universe, and this is just the first taste of that.
I cannot wait to see. I mean, do you Harley in Apocalypse? I'm just intrigued.
She goes to Apocalypse, and she basically feels like she won the lottery. She feels like she's queen badass on Planet Wildcard. So she's gonna have a great time at first, at least, and then of course, as always, complications happen. Apocalypse is full of surprises, and it's never quite what it seems. But it was fantastic to show the fourth world in a little bit different light, and it's been amazing to write Harley. We've got some fantastic plans coming up, issue 50, right around the corner.
Oh, that's right.
Amazing plans for that. I wish I could tell you, but it's going to be awesome. So some great stories coming. Then we've got a true Harley Quinn epic brewing coming up not too long. Story I'm really super excited about. Some big things coming. So we're just kicking off a big long run here.
Now, would you say that your favorite thing about writing Harley is just so that it can go anywhere? She's a character that's just so zany, and the sky's the limit for her.
In a sense, yes, but we're like I said, we're bringing her closer to the center of the DC universe. But what I love about that is she's basically Bugs Bunny in the DC universe. Everybody else, all the other characters get to be who they are.
Right.
But you get to see them in a new light because you collide them with somebody like Harley Quinn. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we have, for example, Granny Goodness in our first issue. Granny Goodness is still Granny Goodness.
Right.
But you see her through Harley's eyes, and you get to see Harley's reaction to her, and it's almost like you see a new side to that character. You see a new side to these concepts, a new side to all sorts of things in the DC universe. So it's a lot of fun using her as a magnifying glass to see the funny cracks in these characters that we've known for so long.
Yeah, and your artist on the first issue that you're doing of Harley, Mirko Andolfo.
No, John Timms. No,
John Timms.
She did the issues right before that. So you're close.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so John Timms. He's done Harley before, so we know
what to expect. He's fantastic.
To expect there. But what's your collaboration been like with him?
Amazing. It really has, like, it's just been one of those collaborations where he and I hit it off right off the bat. I wrote it in a very loose style for him, because he's fantastic on the page. His layouts are incredible, and he makes really inspired choices about what moments to capture in a panel, especially when it comes to the humor and when it comes to the emotion. It takes quite an artist to master the crazy, wild mayhem of Harley, also the deep well of emotion that she has inside her. And John Timms can really do both.
And see, that's what's so interesting to me about the character and what Jimmy and Amanda did. They took her out of Gotham and being kind of a Joker sidekick, two-dimensional, kept the crazy and the zany, but brought so much emotion to it, and you're hoping to continue that, right?
Oh, we're following in their footsteps. They pioneered that, and they did an amazing job and showed us there's so much more to Harley, and we're going to keep going.
So have you heard from a lot of fans? Are they excited to see what your take's going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Harley fans are some of the best fans in the world, and we've shown little glimpses of art here and there, and every time we throw a new panel out in the world, we get a fantastic response.
Great, great. Well, let's shift gears here. I want to talk a little bit about your Green Lanterns run.
Yes.
Now that it's all said and done, how do you feel about it overall? You're really happy with the...
Really happy with it. I miss it. I miss the characters. But it was, with Harley on the horizon, it was the right time to leave instead of staying and trying to tackle the next part of that epic and having to rush through it. Both books are shipped twice a month. So it would have been murder. I wouldn't have been serving either book very well.
Right.
So I was having a great time. There's still a story left to tell in the Seven Rings. Maybe it'll be me. Maybe another writer will pick it up. I look back with a lot of great memories, and I feel really good about where we left those characters. When we started at the beginning of Rebirth, they were little bit established but not well known, and now these are characters with their own fan base, their own fan favorites, and I'm really happy that we're able to build them up in that way.
Yeah, Jessica really had a lot of growth during your run, so I imagine you're happy with where she is now. I mean, she's so much more confident.
Yeah, she's so much more confident, while at the same time still representing people with anxiety, but also just a broader spectrum of mental illness. She's somebody who, she's a character who we've never pretended that she's been cured in any way, but she still gets better, she improves, she copes, and she gets more and more confident, tackles bigger and better things, and now she's a major part of Justice League Odyssey by Josh Williamson that's coming out in July.
Right.
In July. And to all my Jessica Cruz fans out there, I encourage you 1,000% to check out Jessica in that book. That book is going to be awesome. Josh is a great writer and a good friend, and he and I text and talk all the time. So I can assure you that Jessica is in really, really good hands, and I'm really excited to read this book. I'm really excited to read Jessica in this huge, big picture, epic scope context.
So I want to go back to something you said there. Jessica's not cured. And this is why I loved your take on the character. I think social anxiety is a very misunderstood affliction.
Sure.
It's not something that's ever cured. You have good days and you have bad days.
Right.
But it's important to highlight things like this, even for a superhero to deal with them, because it gives somebody a point of reference and somebody, you know, to aspire. Well, I have social anxiety. So does this Green Lantern character that has the most powerful ring in the universe. But it's something that they can look to, right?
Yeah, well, anxiety and also, to a certain extent, other mental illnesses like depression, these are chronic conditions. Mm-hmm. They are medical conditions. They occur in your brain, but they're not in your head.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. These come down to biology, genetics, chemicals. Mm-hmm. They're a medical condition just like any other, but they are a chronic condition. So, yes, get treatment. Yes, help yourself. Yes, build up your armor like Jessica does. Mm-hmm. But also for people around, you know, friends and family, people with anxiety and other mental illnesses, just know that it's a back and forth thing. Some days you're great, some days you're not. Some months you're great, some months you're not. And it's a chronic condition. You're never cured from it, but yes, you can get better. If you have anxiety and you're out there and you're feeling really low right now, I want to say to you, I also have anxiety, and that's why I wrote Jessica Cruz, and that's why I put all that into her. And there are things you can do. You can get help, and you can get better. It is not hopeless.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great message, and I think a perfect spot to end.
Right on, man.
So thank you so much,
Sam. Hey, my pleasure.
Sam, if any of our listeners want to follow along, social media, so they know when Harley Quinn's coming out, all that other stuff, where's the best place to find me?
On Twitter, at Sam Humphreys.
Okay, great. And I'll put a link to Sam's Twitter in the show notes, so you guys can go click there and give him a follow.
Click on that. Click on that link right now. What are you doing? Don't hesitate.
That's right. Go right now. All right. Thank you so much, Sam.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, man. Great.
All right, this is Jace coming to you once again from Denver Comic Con. I have writer Steve Orlando joining me. Thanks for joining me, Steve.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, dude.
Good. It's good to see you again. So for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with you, let's real quickly, I know you like read comics since you could walk, right? Is that true?
Since before I could read, I was reading comics. So
that's awesome. So early on, you wanted to be a writer. Is that all you ever really wanted to do?
Pretty early on. I mean, I wrote and illustrated a book in college and then lettered and printed it. So I've done every part of the comic production process. But, you know, in the mid-90s, when all these events were happening, Clone Saga, Electric Superman, you'd have those little bullpen articles and like little sneak peeks behind the curtain as to how books were created, especially about Electric Superman for whatever reason. And as the different players in the production of a comic became revealed to me, I realized that writing is sort of where I wanted to go, mostly because, you know, the ideas and the implementation of them and the use and utilization of them is really what's most exciting to me. So when I illustrated a book, you know, rather than spending a week on a book or a month on a book, you're spending 100 days on one idea. Like it's so much more micro focused on what is beautiful and exciting about this page, this 1 minute of script, you know, if it were a screenplay. And there's something amazing about that, about putting so much of yourself in each little tiny moment, and that's why being a comic artist is an amazing job. But for me, I got about 50 pages through the 100-page book, and I was like, mentally, I was ready to move on to the next exciting idea. So writing allows you to do that and a lot of different functions, and so, yeah, it was pretty clearly, as I started doing a variety of steps in making a comic, what I most wanted to do.
Yeah, and you've done a variety of things already. I mean, you're relatively new to the industry. What are some of the things that you enjoyed working on most that our listeners may be familiar with?
I mean, with no question, my favorite things I've been part of are anything I've done with Midnighter, and Apollo, the Batman Shadow and the Shadow Batman crossovers. My favorite thing I did last year, and then this year so far, I put together the Milk Wars event with Gerard Way, and we wrote two of those issues and oversaw the others, and it's the most me book that's ever been out there. It's certainly my proudest thing this year.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed that, and also, you had a great answer for my question about the difference between Shadow and Batman in a way is inspired by Shadow. I loved that answer of saying Bruce kind of knows everything, and the Shadow is such a mystery, and that's kind of where you
played with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is, like, you know, as I said in that panel, like, Batman is our eternal stand-in in the DC universe, and so I love these moments where you have to make him mortal, and the Shadow, to him, that is the ultimate acceptance, the acceptance of his fallibility, the acceptance of his humanity, because even though we say, as I had said previously, that Batman is human, it's relatively rare that he exhibits that.
Yep.
We pay lip service to that because he can be killed and he has no superpowers, but when you always have a plan, when you're always 5 to 10 steps ahead of people who are 5 to 10 steps ahead,
right?
No one is actually like that. So I think the best moments with him are the moments that evoke what the Shadow represents, even if it's not with the Shadow, but it's those people that ground him and say, you can always strive for this perfection, but he should never be allowed to get it because we can't get it.
Right, and he needs to be relatable.
And the fact that he is ever striving, to me, that's the real appeal of him.
All right, well, let's switch gears here and talk about Unexpected, New Age of Heroes book. Issue 1 just recently came out, so for any of our listeners who aren't familiar, give them the elevator pitch. What's the Unexpected?
The Unexpected is a team of heroes that sort of deals with crisis on Infinite Earths level villains before they blow up into a crisis, you know? It's led by Neon the Unknown, who's a character who can sort of wield and manipulate reality and mortal materials the way that a sculptor or painter would clay or paints. And he's someone who had a vision of the world forge from metal and that imbued him with his powers. Unfortunately, his opposite, Alden Quench, who's the villain of the book, received the opposite powers also from a vision of the world forge. So while Neon can only create, Alden Quench, the Bad Samaritan, can only destroy. And Neon has put together this group of unexpected allies because the moment that gave him his powers also was an explosive moment that destroyed his entire entourage. So the act of putting together the Unexpected is him trying to redeem himself, and after years as a celebrity artist trying to tear, inadvertently or not, tearing people down, now he wants to build people up. He wants to create, as we've said, he can only create, and creating this team is part of that.
Yeah, and Firebrand, she's kind of our POV character,
yes.
Janet Fales, and we first saw her in Metal, and this, more than any other New Age book, really seems to have its roots in Metal. It seems like you're going to explore a lot of, like, the dark multiverse and the Hot God and the idea of this new kind of metal that we're introducing into One. So I think for fans that were fans of DC Metal, this is where they need to go to get a continuation of that story, right?
I think that's true. I mean, we have a big story that is going to have repercussions for the status quo that was left at the end of Metal. But I don't feel like you should also, I mean, for fans of Metal, yes, you are getting things that matter in Unexpected. But if you didn't read Metal, you should be getting everything you need within the contents of the book. What I feel is important about books like Unexpected and the New Age of DC Heroes in general is that you want to see lasting effects from these events. You know, Crisis on Infinite Earths gave us so many things. It gave us Wally West as the Flash. It gave us the introduction of the next generation of Infinity Inc. heroes. Infinite Crisis gave us Jaime Reyes. You know, I love the tradition of using these events to springboard new generations of characters. And that opens a door to new readers, you know, and new faces that maybe didn't feel that they had a voice in the DC universe, especially with characters like Jaime. So while, you know, the source wall is blown up and all these massive things are happening in Justice League, you see these new people coming out of the shadows because of the events of Metal as well, and hopefully new readers are becoming invited with them.
Right, and yeah, like you said, I think it's very new reader friendly. There's a great double page spread by Ryan Sook and Kerry Nord that kind of explains where everything is right from the start, and then you just hit the ground running.
Well, and we're doing that with Neon in issue 2 as well. I mean, that's our homage to Secret Origins, like those history of the DC Universe, where you'd have these two-page spread origins of Wonder Woman and Superman.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, where you got everything you need to know. So with a book that was introducing so many new characters, we felt it important to give you that info in the leads, so there was less of a barrier of entry, and we could kick off with a story.
And are you finding the collaboration? Kerry Nord, your artist going forward, is that right?
Yes.
So the collaboration with him, that's been good. He's really excited and things are flowing well.
No, Kerry's great. I mean, I followed him, well, even before that, but with Conan and with Exo Manowar, and he's taken very quickly contributed to the very, to the more collaborative style that Ryan and I created for The Unexpected. You know, quote unquote Marvel style, which is a more open style that allows him to innovate, allows him to take the lead on new character designs, the lead on layouts of storytelling. And I've already seen issue two. It's a print right now, and he's doing a fantastic job. I'm very lucky to have him.
Great. I can't wait for issue two. You also want to tease your Wonder Woman. I know you have a Wonder Woman story coming up. You want to give us a little hint of what that's about?
Wonder Woman, yeah. So I'm doing Wonder Woman for a little bit, starting in July with issue 51. And issue 51 is a bottle story dealing with Diana and one of her middle known villains, Mayfly. And it's largely like an overture, you know, before the massive story that we have in 51 to 55 kicks off. 51 gives you the statement, this is who Diana is, this is why she's unique. And we lens it through her relationship with Mayfly. And then in 51 to 55, we have a story about Diana teaming up with Artemis and Aztec to rescue a lost Amazon. Who will see who that is as the book opens. Amazing art by ACO, and then the back two are going to be filling in by a newcomer to DC, Raul Allen. Not newcomer to comics, newcomer to DC. And it is, I think, one of the most exciting Artemis and Diana stories in a long time. Like, I think since the New 52 and Rebirth, we've been waiting for them to sort of come back together. She'd be, you know, they've both been having adventures separately. She's been with the Outlaws, Diana's been with the Justice League, now Justice League Dark. So to get them to come together and finally build a relationship again, very, very exciting to me, across two different settings, the Amazon Basin, the world of the Aztec gods, and then also the currently standing Bonne McDowell City for the last two issues. They really move forward, and there's huge movement for Artemis especially. She has a character beat at the end. She's something that is irreversible with her that I'm super excited about, a positive movement for a character who, you know, has always been sort of the, she's the Jean-Paul Valley to, to Diana's Bruce. Right. And, you know, I started the run not really sure what I thought about her, but she's become my favorite character because she's, in many ways, Artemis is more like us. Diana gives the answer that you want to give, and then Artemis is more like our id, where she gives the answer that we probably
give. Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I think it's very exciting to have them both on the page together for that reason.
Great. I'm really looking forward to that run as well, Steve. I always love to see who you're going to bring in, because you're such a fan of the obscure characters like I am, you know, the B, the C, the D level. So
going.
You never know who's going to show up in a Steve Orlando story, and that's what makes it part of the fun. So,
awesome.
Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I think I would keep an eye out for San Diego Comic-Con. I've been teasing my dream book for a long time, and I think over that weekend you're going to find out what it is. And As long as you've been following my Twitter feed, you might already know what it is. But either way, it's my most exciting book. I have two DC launches in the fall, both of them super creative, super exciting, and I can't wait for you guys to see what they are.
Great. And social media, you mentioned. So where's the best place to follow?
Best place is on Twitter. I mean, I'm on Facebook, but I do a lot more on Twitter, and it's at TheSteveOrlando. And then I'm TheSteveOrlando.com as well.
Okay, great. And I'll put links to those in the show notes, everybody, so you'll know where to go to find Steve.
Awesome.
Hey, thanks for joining me, man. Really appreciate it.
I'm happy to do it.